Welcome to today's podcast. This is your host, Carlos Rodriguez. Always with me, Ruben Rodriguez, controlling social media.
Yo.
Today we have a very, very, very special guest.
Not so special.
I can't emphasize more on the very. He just graduated from Sacramento State. Very, very smart individual. Known this guy all my life because obviously he's my brother. And I'd like to introduce Salvador Rodriguez.
Hi everyone, how's everyone doing? My name is Salvador. It's nice to be here tonight.
Oh, saying it with a Spaniard accent, I see. I mean, because he is obviously getting ready to move to Spain for about 9 months, right?
About 9 months, yeah. We come back in. I leave in October, and I come back around July of next year.
So, are you like nervous in a way, or are you excited to experience like the life in Europe? I guess you could say that.
I'm somewhat nervous. Obviously, it's a whole different atmosphere, a different sphere. Obviously, that I'm going to be going to. It's Spain. I know the language, obviously, but it's, you know, obviously miss my family, miss my friends, but you know, it'll all work out. It's going to be fun.
Well, yeah, and you need to step away from your daily life and everything just to go basically improve yourself as a person, as an all around student, because everywhere you go, you become a better student of the world. So you going to Spain, you're gonna be able to go to a lot of places near there in Europe that obviously like we have. You're gonna be able to go to Italy, obviously, Egypt if you're planning on going there.
Portugal,
you know, you have a bunch of places with a lot of historical art of places that you're gonna be able to learn about, which is gonna be very cool.
Yeah, it's actually the thing is that, you know, since I graduated, like you said, from Sac State, I graduated in May with a history and a Spanish major. So, you know, obviously going to these countries, learning about the history and then going back, you know, actually putting it to practice, it's surreal, obviously. I'm not there yet, obviously, but once I arrive, you know, it's definitely just going to explore Europe, everything has to offer. My main countries that you mentioned that I want to go visit is definitely, I'm going to mostly travel all Spain, all the peninsula, obviously, the Mediterranean, which is, you know, Italia, Greece, you know. I also want to go to Africa if possible, and also to Egypt, you know, to really absorb as much history as I can from there, you know, and, you know, grow as an individual as well.
No Middle East?
I really can't say that I want to do the Middle East as of now. I mean, there is a lot of turmoil, you know. It's very rich in history. It's very rich in culture. It has a very, you know, it has a very huge population, especially within India. But I don't think I'm just ready just yet to go to those type of, you know, that country as of now. Maybe later on in my life or something, once I'm more, you know, established or something, I might go. But as of now, no, I don't see myself going to the Middle East.
So are you more scared of, like, I guess ISIS has basically taken over Syria. It's like all Syria. And are you scared of, like, all those political groups or those radical groups, you can say that, to taking apart all those cities in that area in the Middle East, and them basically coming out of, were they in a civil war? They were practically in a civil war, right? Over there in like the Iraqi areas and stuff like that, the Afghanistan areas.
Well, I really can't say that they were. I mean, it's kind of a hit and miss, you know. Whoever you talk to will say yes, will say no. The only thing about that is that with the Middle East, like I mentioned, there's always been that you know, I go back to that word, you know, turmoil, because it has to do a lot with power. It's been a developing country. You know, it's been recently, it's been more developing. You know, you have Dubai, you have Abu Dhabi, you have a lot of different, you know, different areas within the Middle East that are developing very quickly, but it's all because of oil, it's all because of money, it's all because of corruption. Yeah. You know, you mentioned you have ISIS, you also have this specific religion, Islam, who, you know, prays to Allah. So it's people that are very rooted in their culture and their religion, which is respectable, but at the same time they don't see anything past.
But they feel the group of jihadists that you have there, they believe they're doing good at what they're doing, basically getting rid of all non-Muslims, right? So how do we basically, because we have like they have over there like the centralized jihadists, basically the ones who are in the city, and then we have the jihadists are outside of their state and stuff like that, mm-hmm. their normal place of living, and they bring it over here to the United States, which is I'm not sure if you consider jihadists the ones who basically did the 9/11 attacks, but these guys are. They're going against Christians. They're going against anyone, even other people who are not Muslims. And the Muslim God, which is Allah, in his writings, supposedly a lot of his stuff have been like they're translated to the fact that you need to kill off all non-Muslims, and that's why these guys translate everything to their daily lives, and they want to get rid of. Get rid of the non-Muslims, and just how like the San Bernardino shooting, these people they shot up everyone in that area regardless of their intentions, and we can't even figure that out yet because the FBI is trying to get in the phone, but Apple is holding up their side of the deal of like they're not allowed anyone in that stuff. So how are they themselves, can they progress as a nation, as a culture that they're in, how can they progress?
Well, I mean, you have like the whole aspect of, like I said, with history, it's, they say if you study history you can predict the future, and that's not the case. The case is kind of seeing what happened in the past, obviously, mm-hmm. how you can look at the present and what's going to happen in the future. It's almost like a calculation based, almost mathematics. Mm-hmm. You know, somewhat of a recent example, you say, you know, Hitler trying to get rid of, you know, all the Jews from Germany, you know, anything from Poland, anything, you know, from Austria, just trying to, you know, remove them to try to better the Aryan race. Then you have actually the Spaniards, you know, coming to the Americas and then raiding pretty much all the indigenous people because they wanted to better them because it wasn't them. And this has always been going on. You have Romans, you know, getting rid of those that were Christians, those that were Muslim at the time. Mm-hmm. It goes back into history, obviously. So ISIS or even if it's Muslims or if it's Pakistan, anybody, you know, right now, they see themselves as a superior race and they are trying to wipe out that which is not pure blood, pure Muslim, that which is not born into the religion, born into the culture. Culture, they're just seen as not pure and not worthy of living, and that's a scary thing because in Iran or any country right now that is Muslim or that is, you know, of Indian descent, if you are not of that, you are not very welcome. You know, you have a caste system, you have all of these different levels that if you don't pertain to them, you know, you just you're not welcome. Mm-hmm. Like I said, and just seeing it back, you know, as a lot of things, even, you know, like in China with Huns, and it's pretty much a reoccurring theme. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a reoccurring theme that there is going to always be that one religion, that one culture that mm-hmm. is going to try to dominate, you know, that in mm-hmm. that other individuals, other cultures, just because of the fact that the beliefs are different. They don't see eye to eye on so many things.
And so we obviously, when you bring up like that, like we've had this forever and stuff like that, and when you're a history major, when you study the history, you could predict the future, basically, because you're going back from the past, you go into the present, you hop into the future.
It's not really so much, I don't want to sound like being like a fortune teller, like I have like a little crystal ball here. No, it's not predicting the future, it's just pretty much studying history and kind of seeing the outcome of what happened before, mm-hmm. and kind of like having like a prediction. And prediction, I guess, it's kind of having like a rough estimate about what is to come. Mm-hmm. Even in Napoleon, you know, Napoleon also was an ultimate ruler, try to wipe out, you know, try to become a dominant figure. Again, like I said, it's just It's just anybody that has a certain view in things will always see it that they're the right ones and everyone else is wrong.
And see, this brings me to our last podcast we had made. This last podcast, to a lot of people, it might have seemed like it was kind of pointless, kind of stupid. But if you look at it, if you give it the overview of it, we showed and everyone and whoever decided to listen to it that if you try to kill a government and remake another one, us four that were making our government, all four of us basically separated at one point. Luis had more of the gladiator type of days, you know, back in like Rome. You basically get killed, they throw you in the pit, and you have to fight for your life. Aaron had more of a totalitarian kind of government where you can't even leave your home. You couldn't leave there. Ruben had more of a libertarian kind of government where you're more allowed to be out and free. And mine is probably the more modern day America. We have drunks trying to control the government. And we basically do have our hands on every nuclear weapon we can, you know, aside from the North Korea having their nukes and everything like that. But that we gave a sure example of when you try to kill off a government and make your own new one, we're still gonna be separated as people. We're still gonna have these type of radical groups, something like the jihadists, that want to get away and go and kill off anyone who's not like them. So, how here in America, how do we as Americans prosper and become stop trying to be equal to everyone else around the world, and instead let's try to centralize our government to the point where we are all as one?
The funny thing is that the way this country was established, we have, you know, the pilgrims coming mm-hmm. from, you know, Europe, escaping, you know, all of this oppression, trying to escape, you know, King James's rule over them, trying to, you know, to empower them. I'm sorry, not empower them. They try to empower themselves, actually, leaving Europe, coming here to America to try to get away from, you know, oppression and everything. And then the way that this country is built by our forefathers, you know, trying to better themselves, but still almost emulating that which is Europe. Yeah, we don't have a parliament, but we do have a Senate. We do have, you know, a House. We do have, you know, a President. But at one point, you know, Parliament is almost the same thing as a Senate, like almost a House. The King is almost as a President. You know, they have the one ruler. Yeah, Parliament overlooks that ruler and kind of tells them what to do. Mm-hmm. So in a way, we are still copying. There's to this day, there is actually states, actually there's countries in Latin America, actually it's more Southern America, who actually try to emulate our government here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But you have to go based off of, you know, if you try to emulate someone else's government, you're not always going to be able to do that. Because the fact is that even like in Argentina and that kind of stuff, when Argentina was trying to establish their own government, they have to go based off their own, what they have. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the U.S. and Argentina have very different resources, very different, you know, views on certain things. They have the same stuff. So, you know, in Argentina, you have a president. They have, you know, their Congress. But they try to emulate that which is here. And you really can't do that. You know, you have to kind of build yourself. You have to kind of, you know, like, establish yourself as your own first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of grow from there. Grow with your people. Grow with your surroundings, everything. Mm-hmm. It's like things that sprout. People, a lot of countries try to emulate, usually sometimes if they're not at war with the U.S., try to emulate the U.S. Mm. just because they see, like, us as a perfect government. But I mean, I don't really think any government is a perfect government right now. It's hard to say.
No, because I mean, when we go back to the days of when the Articles of Confederation were made, and then the Shays Rebellion was what got that out of there to be able to create what is now the Declaration of Independence, and all our amendments, all everything we us as individuals have as rights in this country, the Bill of Rights, obviously. So, but If you look back at it, okay, James Madison, which is the biggest writer of the Declaration of Independence, he was only 23 when he wrote this. So you see, you're starting to see the age gap of how it is nowadays, because the elderly are in government today. So we are going off a past. We are going off a piece of paper that was written thousands of years ago. Even though we are generally it's still a young country, we're still young when you compare it to a lot of Europe. You know, and so why don't it, if we try to amend the Constitution and bring something else in, new amendments, we're going to run into the same problem that we're in today. If you want to make everyone equal, so let's make the poor people have money now. You give them the power to be able to become rich. Once they get rich, they're gonna want to keep that power. So we can't. At least in my eyes, what Donald Trump is doing, how he is mapping out his stuff, in a way it kind of makes sense. The rich need to stay rich. The poor need to try to get rich. That's how society keeps building. And Hillary Clinton, in a way, she wants to keep the government exactly how it is, how the Obama administration had done it. But the Obama administration really has not done anything, if you look at it.
And that's the thing, too. Going back to like Europe and that kind of, you know, when Europe, you had like this, you can call it the 1%, the rich, kings, lords, you know, councilmen, they all were, you know, they had power. But then you have a class after the Renaissance, obviously, you have like a whole class of people, a middle class. It's called the bourgeoisie. Mm-hmm. The middle class, merchants, you know, tradesmen, anything that had to do with like, you know, interaction with selling, they were seen as a middle class. Mm-hmm. Upper middle class or lower middle class, depending how you want to look at it. But then you have the poor as well, too. Mm-hmm. The poor was anyone from a servant, anybody that had no money, anybody, you know, just that pretty much worked for somebody else. Mm-hmm. A merchant, you know, was middle class, then upper class. In this country, we have the 1%, which they call the 1%, mm-hmm. and then you have most of America literally as a middle class, mm-hmm. living as middle class. Mm-hmm. And then you have poverty as well, too, mm-hmm. which we do have in this year. We even have slavery still to this day, mm-hmm. modern day slavery and, you know, prisons. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, too. So, I mean, any country, you literally have almost, it's hard to like have either rich or poor. There's going to be that fine line. That middle ground, like I said, the bourgeoisie is actually the one that runs, or that one's like, you know, like they kind of make a country run. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, it's the exact same way too. In Central America, and actually, I believe it was in Venezuela, I believe, they tried doing away with the poverty, with poor. Mm-hmm. They said the poor is what's bringing this country down. So if we get rid of the poor, we're actually gonna be okay. So that actually, they would take people out of poverty and kill them, mm-hmm. So that the country would better itself. But you really can't look at things like that, because if you see us as the poor being the issue, I think at one point it's actually the rich, hmm. who sometimes, you know, because like I said, the bourgeoisie is the one that carries the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you start looking at stuff like this, when you start looking at the governments of everywhere else and how they are basically running a lot of their systems and stuff, and how you say you want to kill off the poor, but also in a way the poor have a reason for this country. You know, as they're the ones that at least if you have the working poor that want to become middle class and then soon to get to the poor, to the highest 1%, because we've seen it happen. We've seen people who live in poverty actually make it out, and we have certain places like the NBA, the NFL, soccer, the whole FIFA and everything. It's given the ability to some people to be able to overcome all these things. So now we have people like Colin Kaepernick in a way that's standing up for the poor people, or like even the minorities are getting oppressed in this country. How do you feel about what he's advocating, I guess, that what has happened to his people, and basically what you see what happened to your people, which is the Latino population. How do you feel he is also standing up for us, or minorities are all one group, or is he just attacking one group, basically, which is his group, that are getting oppressed?
Well, I think he's attacking it. I think he's trying to more so like bring awareness to it. Obviously, you know, we've seen that when you have money, you have power, and you have, you know, and he being a professional athlete and all, there is that one sense of he having a voice. He has a voice. All of us have a voice, obviously, but his voice can be heard to millions watching, you know, millions of viewers. That one kneeling down, you know, that's actually a statement. All lives matter. All lives matter at the end of the day. If you're white, you know, you kind of, you know, have that privilege. If you're a minority, you know, anything from black, Mexican, anything that has to do with a minority that's not white, mm-hmm. you know, Anglo-Saxon, that's looked at as, you know, as minority. So him doing that kind of gives a voice. We've all had, you know, like Martin Luther King, you know, Cesar Chavez. We've all had, you know, Gandhi, Muhammad. Like, all of those individuals have stood up for a specific belief, and everyone tries to emulate them at that point. But I think he, people will try, obviously, to bring awareness to certain things, and he's doing that. I mean, you know, he's obviously, he doesn't believe in the system, in our American system, that, you know, yeah, cops are killing off people and that kind of stuff left and right. Mm. So he's obviously taking a stand. Some individuals might see it as something good. Some individuals might see it as something, you know, not patriotic. But really, at the end of the day, who are we to decide what's patriotic in this country anymore or not? How can you have someone that's fighting a war who is, you know, maybe a minority, mm. you know, but still comes back home and feels like racism, feels oppression? Like, that is not very patriotic.
Mm. So you bring that up about, like, going to fight a war. So do you believe that 18-year-olds in this country should be going to war?
The only reason why 18-year-olds go to war is because, as you brought up, the whole fact of, like, you know, about getting the Declaration signed, you know, by James Madison at 23. We see the country pretty much built on the fact that if you're older, you're wiser. You know, like, the more age you have, the more wise you are. So you're, like, more, our brains tend to stop developing after the age 25. For a woman, I believe it's 26. Mm. So when you hit that peak, you know, you're like, oh, your brain's stopped developing, but you still have all this wisdom. Mm. 18-year-olds at this point don't really have a family. They are more of, like, you know, it's kind of more like, go out there and just shoot. And a lot of 18-year-olds do. A lot of 18-year-olds, you know, just get out there and, you know, raise hell. And that's what a lot of them do. That's why the reason why they go to, there's, I think, a cap in the army that you can only be up till, I think, the age of 26 or 27, that they don't allow you to, you know, enlist anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't actually, or for the draft, actually, for if the draft were ever to happen again, they don't draft you after the age of 26. Why? Because at this point, you already kind of more of a conscious mind of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But when you're 17 or 18, you're pretty much just going. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, you're fresh out of high school. If you want to go kill somebody, you want to get killed yourself, do it. Mm-hmm. You don't really think about it. Mm-hmm. But when you have a family and when you have kids, like, you're not really going to be inclined to go shoot somebody because that could be my kid right there. That could be my wife right there. Mm. I think that's why, you know, they choose such a young age to go kind of, you know, go to war.
And when we talk about young ages, when you talk about people going into that kind of life, I guess you could say that, or that type of environment, the in the war at a young age, they do come back really messed up from these wars. So now, as we go back to James Madison, when he was 23, when the whole Declaration of Independence was made and signed and everything, at that, I don't know if you could say this, but at least at a younger age, you're more inclined to be more open to ideas. As far as when you, you know, at least when you get to, like, the minimum age to become a president is 35. Okay, so now, why don't we try to get more people, young people in the government, in a way so they can have fresher ideas to be able to progress the society, instead of sticking to what we know, sticking to basically the everyday life that a lot of the older generations get into now, because everyone from the 60s right now are in office, basically 60s, 70s, everyone's in office. Now we're getting the 80s and 90s, where we're going to start replacing all these elected officials. We're going to start replacing a lot of these people. So as they come in, they're going to have to find a way to try to find equality. You know, are we going to keep marijuana illegal and let everyone who is in the prisons prisons out? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you have to look at it as well, too. You know, like, back then, the average American probably wouldn't live past the age of, like, maybe 30, 35. Mm-hmm. So you had a lot of disease, you know, a lot of famine. It was not a good thing. So that's why, I mean, if you reach a certain age, like 23 or, you know, even 30, like, you were just, you know, considered, like, you know, you're kind of making it, you were doing good. Mm-hmm. So the way that it kind of has progressed is, like, at least now for us, you know, like, the older you are, like I said, the wiser you are. The kids, if you have like a 23-year-old or 32-year-old coming out of college, fresh out of college with ideas, most of them are just looking to work. Most of them are just to pay off debt. Mm-hmm. So until you get established, that's when you are seen as respected. In higher academia, when you have, you know, when you get to a doctorate, you are respected. Even if you're like 25, you have a doctorate, you really started off young, you are respected. But in politics, it's more of like an age gap. The wiser you are, it's because you're older. The younger you are, you're more, because even like with elections, you see the election, the way the polls work, young people, people within the ages of 18 that can vote, 18 like 20 something, like 25, are not very inclined to vote because they don't really care about what's going on in the government, because they're trying to figure out their lives, they're trying to get out of college, trying to get a job, you know, become something of themselves. When you become like at least like 50, 55, or 60, your life is already pretty much made and you're retiring. So you pretty much have a sense how the world works. That's why they want officials that are older. But then you have individuals who sometimes, you know, are just too old now to even function sometimes, unfortunately.
Because then we have people like Hillary Clinton come into office. Then we have people like Donald Trump, which is old. He's older than Hillary Clinton. So we are banking on older officials, older people coming into the office and becoming part of Congress, becoming part of the presidency. Why are, at least why we should, the youngest president we've had is JFK, right? If I believe, because then it's Obama, and
We've had Obama, obviously, and there hasn't been another young president, I think, ever. Pretty much, they have. And again, we go back to the same thing, like the older you are, and a lot of our presidents actually have been military-based. Military individuals who, you know, have had like that, they're their generals, or they're like their sergeants, or they're something. And it's always been like that. They've always wanted, you know, like it's very military-driven. Obama wasn't in the military, obviously. He, you know, went to school and stuff, so it's very different, obviously, the way things are seen. JFK didn't go to war. He never was in, you know, the government, or never part of the army. So, I mean, we have gone away from this. His story is like the rags to riches kind of story. He did start from the bottom. He was very humble, but he kind of let himself go with all this media attention and everything. He's always been like a puppet for individuals. He's gone on TV shows, on television, TV shows, on movies. So he's been really more like, he's more driven by the media. So to him, I think this is just pretty much all more like publicity. And like they say,
well, he's proven the dumber you act on stage, the more publicity you get, exactly. and the more people want you on the bunny for you. It's like when we go back to Arnold Schwarzenegger won the elections right here in California. Did he know anything about politics? No. What happened in California in those years he was in office? Nothing. He did absolutely nothing for California. And why did he win? Because he was part of the fame. He was a newcomer coming in. Like, oh, maybe since he doesn't follow the side of politics, maybe he will do some. Maybe he'll do something good for us. Exactly how Donald Trump right now running for presidency. Will he do something good? Probably not. But I think what he would do is expose a lot of truths to the government. Like I said one time. I'm metaphorically saying this. I'm not saying that he's actually gonna do this, but he's gonna have like an open house day at the White House. Like, hey, you guys want to come and see secrets? Fucking come in here and see them. But at least he's different from what we're used to seeing. Some like JFK, he was different when he came in the office. That's why they wanted to kill him off. That's why there's a lot of conspiracies. Supposedly our own government killed off JFK. That supposedly Lee Harvey Oswald was contracted by the government so he can kill him off. And there's still other type of stuff that say that supposedly he couldn't have done it alone, or he probably was alone, or there's a bunch of conspiracies that come into play when it comes to that. But that goes to show we are scared as a government, as a society, and the government is obviously paranoid to let someone new who is not following the everyday political life that everyone else is following. That's why they want to keep a consistency. That's why they want to have people on the Supreme Court who will basically go with the Declaration. They go against the Constitution and stuff. That's why no time soon we're gonna progress as a society at all. Especially when we see countries like in Europe, or I mean like states in Europe, we see everything over there, how they're going with their government, with their centralized governments. At least when you look back at Nazi Germany, And that was a totalitarian government run by Hitler. Just how a Stalin for Russia. These guys, aside from them being horrible human beings, if you could say anything about them, they went against the government that they had in place, and they became the leaders. They became practically dictators, you could say. Well, a dictator is more of Fidel Castro, which is why we had to try to get to at least to Cuba, because the reason why America goes into a lot of these other countries and stuff like that is just to find, just so we can have more peace around the world. Not even peace, just so we know they're not trying to plan an attack on us. So like that we don't have another 9/11. So like that we don't have another Pearl Harbor. We don't have another war like the one the Vietnam War. This is why we need a centralized government that keeps all us civilians in check, or else we will go. I mean, Trump could go, but the thing about it is our government kind of checks him, like, no, you can't do that. But if he had the power, he would change this to a totalitarian government, right?
Yeah, it makes sense, obviously.
And how also Mexico, how's Mexico doing right now?
Not very well. Well, I mean, it's a lot of things to do, obviously, as well, too, with the government. It's, you know, with Peña Nieto and stuff, and with the whole cartel situation right now, they're trying to figure that out. Mexico's always been, you know, in turmoil as well, too. It's the presidency, a lot of corruption to go on as well, too. So, I mean, only time will tell after this election's passed what exactly is going to come about with other countries. If Trump is the one that's elected, or we're going to probably feel, you know, from other countries that either they're going to be on ball with it, or they're just literally not going to be, you know, because of everything he said right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, North Korea, look at them. Mm-hmm. That whole area, man, it's to the point where everyone, I don't even heard about this. In North Korea, they're only allowed, they have their own internet, right? But they're limited to only about 20 websites.
Yeah, they're also able to only, it is a dictatorship as well, too, because they're only able to go out at certain times. They can only go to the store, grocery store, like every couple of days. They have, and it's interesting, too, because a professor of mine, he's Korean, he actually went to visit his family in Korea, and he was driving around, and you know, you could see, I guess, like the windows full of, like, you know, food and, like, groceries and stuff. But then I guess just, like, all, like, it's just for show, because it's just like cardboard, just to show that in case anybody kind of like goes to visit Korea. And
so,
stuff.
So everything they showed in the movie of the interview, which is that comedy with James Franco and Seth Rogen, that's actually true.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
In the fact that, I didn't know that.
Okay. It's true in the sense of the fact that Korea, obviously, I'm pretty sure everyone has heard that their ruler doesn't use the bathroom and stuff. Like he wants to be seen as like a god. Hmm. He wants to be seen as that which is so holy, because at that point people begin to actually see, like, well, my ruler is this person who is high and mighty, so I should follow him because he's going to lead us to greatness. Hmm. And that's why, you know, some people that are able to manipulate the countries or manipulate their people are just so strong, because you have a strong force behind you. Hmm. You don't have anybody questioning you. Hmm. You have no loose ends. You have no, you know, people infiltrating your stuff. It's like you have ultimate power over your people, and ultimate power ultimately corrupts, but is able to withhold that from individuals as well, too.
In North Korea, you can say, like, the people growing up there, they're like the kid that was never, they were never allowed to go out. When they get older, they're not gonna know how the world works. They're not gonna be able to live a normal life like any of us over here in the Americas would. So, and it almost leads me back to the story of the girl who never existed. There's a girl born in Texas where her parents never took her to the hospital, never got her, never got her social security number, never got anything. So, and they basically isolated her, her and her brothers and sisters on a ranch. So now she's not able, finally she was able to leave the house, and she went with her grandparents, which they did not have the same ideals as their kid. I think it was a dad, the grandparents were the dad. And she finally left, and she went out to the world. To come to find out, you need your social security for everything. She's looked at as a weird kid in the world when she first came in. She did not. She was self-taught. Well, not even self-taught. She was homeschooled, and anything that just her parents wanted her to know. It's a fascinating podcast. Usually the Radio Lab podcast. That's where I heard this whole story at. But it basically what the North Koreans are getting to. They are unless somehow some way we get in there and we kick out anyone who's any dictator that's in that's coming up after. I think we're on Kim Jong Il right now.
No, I think Kim Jong
Un. Kim Jong Un.
King Jong Un.
Yeah, until we come in there and kick him out of there, and then we try to centralize that government too, and make it more efficient for them, make it for the people to be able to go out of there. That's why Aaron's supposed area in our make believe world. That's why his is more like a North Korea, where his people are not going to be able to experience the outside world. Aside, yeah, maybe he might give him the ability to be able to go out and go on the internet and look up whatever they want. But remember, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. Everything has to come off of what you believe and what you know. And this is why the education is so important to nowadays, because as we spoke earlier, you said you grow more as an individual going through the whole school system and graduating. It makes you more inclined to be able to not be so subjectified to just knowing one thing. Instead, open your mind up and become someone better, right?
True.
That's why, like, your trip to Spain, you're gonna be other. You probably are gonna inherit a culture that you're not used to. Mm-hmm. And every culture is different. So now you're gonna be able to come back and be a little more wiser in the sense of be able to say, they do this different over here, and it works over here for them. So why can't we do that over here?
Yeah.
Right.
That makes sense. It makes sense, obviously, because I mean, everywhere is different. Especially in Europe, you know, it's an old world. It's old thinking. They see things very different than we do, obviously, here. So it's gonna be a trip, you know. But we'll see what they have to hold.
Yes, we will. But I think that will draw us to the end, because I know you need to get out of here. So it was a pleasure having you on here, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Hopefully we get you when you come back again from Spain. You can come and talk to us about so much more fun facts of that goes on over there.
Of course, I would love to. It's a lot of fun. Thank you once again, and I hope that the podcast, everything goes well with it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.